Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, it's all about automotive questions and cars and trucks. And Gordon Fricke is here. Gordon is owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls now. This is always a popular show. My suggestion is call early, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We will get to your automotive questions right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are talking automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We will get to as many emails as possible also, and that address is voxpop@wamc.org. But the surest way to get in the program is to call 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here.
Lovely driving weather today.
Oh, it's fantastic. A total blue sky.
It feels nice, but you know winter's right around the corner.
It's going to come sooner or later. We've had such nice warm weather, though. It just feels like it's going to last forever.
It's hard to believe that within a month or 6 weeks, we will have some sloppy driving.
People are calling me saying, should I be putting my snow tires on? Is it too soon? I usually say wait till November, but you know, you forget that it's coming sooner than you think.
Yeah, well, a lot of calls here already, so I guess we better get to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we go to Grant in Wilmington, Vermont. Grant, you're first.
Thanks. I got a 02 Subaru Legacy wagon. And the brakes went out due to fluid loss. And the mechanic didn't lay eyes on the leak, but thinks it's in the middle of the vehicle where, you know, it's obscured. So presumably gunk built up and corroded it.
Yeah.
His initial idea was it was going to be like 2-3 hours. But he wasn't able to locate the part, so there was discussion of he's not allowed to use compression clamps on it, or he would have to flange it out. So I was wondering, are those three different options? And can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah, yeah. He's speaking of what's called a compression fitting, and that is not usable on brake lines. They can't take the extreme pressure that a brake system can develop, and they could fail and leak. So can't use compression fittings. So what we commonly do, in a car like your Subaru, a lot of the brake lines run inside the vehicle, so they're not exposed to the salt and the elements and the outdoor stuff. So they generally only have brake line issues towards the rear of the car where they leave the body and go out to the rear axle.
Yeah.
Subaru has a couple of connecting blocks back there, and there was a recall. And I'm not sure if your car is of that vintage, but they were corroding, and you'd lose brake fluid, and you'd lose your brakes. It wouldn't hurt to call a Subaru dealer with your VIN number just out of the chance that your car is one of those recalled vehicles. Aside from that, it's very common practice to cut, flare, and install unions and then add on to your brake lines. Cut out the bad pieces, go to where it's good again, and that's an acceptable repair. So, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. We do a lot of them.
Okay.
Okay.
That's great. It's like vascular surgery.
Well, kind of, yeah.
How about that? Our number is 800-348-2551, and our guest is Gordon Fricke. Matt in Pownall, Vermont is next. Matt.
Hi, yeah. I've got a 2004 Honda Element. And this morning it revved really high, and then I shut it off and started it again, and then it wouldn't start. So it was a vacuum hose that had popped off. So I replaced that, and then the car still wouldn't start. Disconnected the battery in hopes of resetting the ECU. Did that, and it still didn't start. And it sounds like it's not getting fuel. So that is my question.
What vacuum line was it? Was it a very large one or just a little tiny one?
Yes.
A big one.
It was both. It was kind of, it split, so there was like a large and a small one together.
Okay. So now it cranks and cranks and cranks, but will not fire.
Yep.
Does it attempt to start? Do you hear any hiccups or pops or attempts to run?
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, it's entirely possible you have two things happening. It'd be a little bit strange for them to be simultaneous, but what you could do in the event that it flooded is hold the accelerator pedal to the floor and then start, and then attempt to start it and let it crank and crank and crank with your foot to the floor. If you flooded it by mistake after you fixed the vacuum line, that oftentimes will clear the extra gasoline and get it to start by offering it extra air. And a lot of vehicles have a clear flood function that when you put the gas pedal all the way to the floor and crank it, it shuts the fuel injectors off.
So try
that. If you do get it to run, it's going to spit and sputter and cough, and then it'll clear up and it'll run fine. If that doesn't do you any good at all, you could give the intake a little spray of, let's say, a carburetor cleaner or an intake cleaner.
Yep.
And
yep.
the engine will draw that in, and if you've lost fuel supply, it'll start for a few seconds and run on that spray that you offered it. And that's kind of a backyard test that you're losing fuel, but it doesn't tell you why. So I'd try those. I'd try those things and see where you end up.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today on an action-packed edition of WAMC Vox Pop. Don't forget the fun drive begins on Monday at 6 a.m. And if you want to shorten that fun drive, go to WAMC.org, feed the lockbox, and then we'll be back to regular programming sooner rather than later. Yeah, work for you.
How soon has that been happening now? One day?
1 or 2 days.
Could it?
It could happen again.
Could it be a zero fundraiser?
I mean, in theory.
It's possible.
I'm not sure we're at that point yet.
It's getting close.
I mean, we're not quite at driverless cars yet either.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at some point it will happen.
Moving in that direction.
Exactly. Let's go over to Mary in Albany. Mary, you're on.
Hi, thank you. Great show.
Thank you.
I have a 2007 Saturn Ion, and it has started, and now it's been lasting for several months. The door locks click on and off while driving. No apparent indicator, nothing stuck in the doors, no explanation that my mechanic can find. We disconnected the battery, hoping that maybe the system would reset itself. And sometimes it's just the audible sound down below the dashboard of clicking, and other times it's the door locks themselves actually opening and closed like they're haunted. So good luck.
Yeah. Does your car have remotes for locking and unlocking the doors?
No.
So it's just power locks, but no fob, no remotes from the outside.
Correct.
Okay.
Although I did wonder, it started after I was in a parking lot where a number of people were goofing around and clicked their remotes and opening their cars, their lights on, lights off, and so on. And it was on that drive home that it first started. So I wondered if that somehow was a trigger, but I don't myself have remote locks.
Did the car ever have them? Have you had the car since new?
I've had it since new.
Okay.
No, it didn't. Although it did come with OnStar, which I never activated.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that affects the answer.
Well, if you had remotes, I'd be concerned that one of them has a battery that's just about dead and it's freaking out the remote and turning the locks on and off. But that theory is now blown. You could have a ground problem that has to do with the power locks, and it's making and breaking that ground connection, and that's what's producing the request for the locks to go on and off or to open and shut.
Are these the wires that are in the door that can get frayed?
Well, that is one possibility that's always worth checking. And the door that gets opened and shut the most is, of course, the driver's door. And we find a lot of frayed or broken wires in that big connection that goes from the door to the body of the car. and that will affect power windows, it'll affect power locks, mirrors, all kinds of functions. Always a good idea, and that's pretty easy to look in there and open that like that harness up and see if there's any bad wires in there.
I have no knowledge of Saturns, but is it worth it for Mary to pull the fuse for that for the locks and reset it? I know that in one of our minivans, it would occasionally it would not lock.
Yeah.
And I had to just pull the fuse and put it back in, and then it would work.
Was that a corroded fuse issue, or did it just kind of reset the system?
It's one of those things I found on the internet after saying, well, what is wrong with this car?
Well, it's an interesting concept because everybody power cycles their computers, their phones, their iPads if they glitch or lock up. And car computers suffer the same thing periodically, and you do have to sometimes clear them out. But I think that Mary mentioned that they did they disconnect? Did you get your battery unhooked and reconnected? Did you tell me?
Yes, he did that. He also opened up the doors to check. I'm not sure what he actually did once he had the doors open. He's a pretty thorough guy. So
If you don't really care about the power locks, I think he could eliminate them by going to their power supply. If it drives you crazy and you don't care about power locking the car, and that would just end the whole issue. But
I'm realizing as I'm parked and about to turn the car off, if I do that and leave the key in the ignition, you would hear the endless beeping, which was not the case before. If the car was completely off and not an accessory, I wouldn't get bell set signals, and I get that now as well. So I don't know if that's related. But
here's something quick and easy to do. The door latches have micro switches in them to turn on and off the dome light and also tell the vehicle if the doors are open or shut or locked. Maybe it would be good to spray every latch on the car with something light and mild like a WD-40 or some product like that and open and shut the doors a bunch of times, operate all the locks. While you're at it, do the trunk and hood so all your latches are nice and free and easy. And just by chance, see if that has any effect on it.
Thank you so much.
Mary, thank you. We'll take a quick break. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMT comes from Studio KTM Red Hook, a hair salon specializing in both adults and children, and introducing the Naturalik line of organic, ammonia-free hair coloring products from Denmark. StudioKTM.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. Vermont Coffee Company Playhouse, Middlebury, Vermont. Presenting Irish artist Connor Lovett, performing works by Samuel Beckett, October 21st and 22nd, eventbrite.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, announcing Open House, October 19th, from 5:30 to 7:30, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery and skin care since 1996, 518-786-1700. And the Discovery Center, presenting October programs featuring nighttime sensory, fall foliage, and bird migration hikes, AlbanyPineBush.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Cars and trucks and things with Gordon Fricke today. And over to Eric in Albany. Eric, you're on.
Hi, yes, gentlemen. I have a 2012 Jetta that the camshaft position sensor went, replaced it, everything was fine. About a week later, the check engine light came on again, and now it's saying that it's over advanced, and this keeps happening. I replace the sensor, redo the timing, everything goes well, and then it says the same thing, you know, a week or so later. What could that be?
Yeah, that's not a nice code that we're seeing a lot of nowadays. How many miles are on your car?
Just about 112.
Have you owned it since new?
Yes. and it's had all the scheduled maintenance and everything done to it. The only thing that it hasn't had done is the actual replacing of the timing unit, the chain. And they said that that didn't look like it was any issue because it was still within, you know, spec.
Yeah, the chains usually are not a problem. Here's what we see causing these problems on all cars pretty much today, not just your Volkswagen. The manufacturer, and we talk about this all the time, the oil changes are way too spread apart.
Yep.
They're saying do them every, I don't know, your car might be every 10,000 miles?
Correct.
Yeah, it's way, way too much. And keeping that oil in that engine that long is good. The government likes to keep it in the crankcase, less pollution. Engine burns up more oil. There's less of it going into the water and soil. I totally get that, and that's 100% good. But it's creating deposits inside these engines, and the first thing it affects is these variable timing, these camshaft timing advances and valve phasers. And what's probably happening to your car is your camshaft adjuster is getting stuck due to sludge and debris formation from the long oil change intervals. Can you do anything?
So should I, like, seafoam it?
Well, what you could attempt to do now, and I had success with this, and there's that zero results guaranteed, but you can change the oil and put in a bottle of an additive that will clean out the oil system, the lubrication system. However, it may make it worse. It may loosen up so much junk that it goes in there and plugs up the passages worse. So you got to do it completely at your own risk. What's cheaper and what's easier and less risky is to, I don't know if you do your own oil changes, but change the oil a couple of times fairly quickly. Like, change it today, put on 1,000 miles, change it again, put on another 1,000 miles. Sometimes that fresh oil will cleanse the system and not be so abrupt and loosen up everything. But I think that's
like purging it.
Kind of. You're kind of flushing it out, but not abruptly all in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
But you're in the same boat as you know, millions of other people with these cam issues.
Yeah, and I'm $1,000 into the hole because every time I go in there, you know, they're $95 to diagnose it, and then the sensor, and then, you know, the time.
It's generally, very rarely, it's the sensor's fault. The sensor's just reporting what it sees, and it doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know that there's oil sludge in there.
Okay. Hey, Eric, good luck.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate the call. And now we go over to Texas, and Rob is on the line. Rob, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I've got a 2008 Honda Civic. I had air conditioning one day. The next day I didn't. I tried charging it up. Nothing. I can't even get the clutch to kick in. And I'm only home 5 days a week, 5 days a month. So I have a hard time even trying to get it fixed. But, I mean, what would cause something that fast?
So the state of charge is okay, you're saying. It's the refrigerant charge is okay.
I put in so that it almost went into redlining it, but I still couldn't get the compressor to kick over.
Okay. There's a couple of things that can cause that. Is the check engine light on?
No.
Okay. I had an 08 Civic this summer. Suddenly lost its air conditioner. I can't remember if the check engine light was on or not, but I scanned it, and I discovered a coolant temp sensor number 2 or A or B. I can't remember. It was a secondary coolant temp sensor that had failed, and it took the air conditioner offline because it didn't know if the engine was going to overheat, if the fans weren't working. And the car came in with no air conditioning, but I also discovered that the fans weren't working on all their speeds. Long story short, I changed this temp sensor, which screws into the bottom of the radiator, if I remember correctly, and that fixed the fans and brought the air conditioner back online immediately.
Fairly cheap fix.
Yeah, it was very cheap. But somebody needs to go in there and scan it, see if you got any coolant temp sensor codes in there. Other than that, it could be the pressure switch that tells the system that the refrigerant is at the right charge amount and it's okay to turn the compressor on. So there's a couple things there to check.
All right. Well, I'll be home at the end of the month. Maybe I'll bring it to you.
Hey, Rob, how are you listening to us?
I'm on the phone listening on WAMC.org.
Oh, God bless you, man. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate hearing from halfway across the country. It is Vox Pop on WAMC, and our number here, 800-348-2551. Wherever you are, give us a shout. And Jim in Westfield, Massachusetts. Jim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My girlfriend has a 2011 Nissan Rogue, and last year we were coming back from the Cape, and all of a sudden I noticed that there was no power. I mean, the car was still idling, but there was no power. So didn't think anything of it, got it home, didn't do it the whole way, just did it sporadically, and then no problems for a year. And then, again, we went on a long vacation. On the way home, it was doing it again. So what I did is somebody had said, well, you know, maybe it's a fuel injector or something. So I shouldn't have listened to him, but I did. So I put in some fuel injector cleaner, and it seems to be happening more and more. So now I'll be sitting at a light with the car. The light will turn green. I'll go to give it the gas, and it'll just be sitting there idling.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, within a couple seconds, it'll get up and go. But it doesn't have the power that it used to either.
Yeah. It sounds to me like your electronic throttle is having trouble. There's no physical connection from the gas pedal to the engine anymore. It's all electronic. So when you step on the accelerator pedal, you're sending a request to the computer to go faster or to increase the engine speed. That throttle unit can get sticky from sludge and deposits. How many miles are on the car, roughly?
I'm going to say about 80,000.
Okay. Scanning the system may indicate some throttle codes in there that haven't turned the check engine light on. The throttle unit can...
Because the check engine light hasn't come on at all, and that's what's throwing me off.
Yeah. It's going to need to be scanned with Nissan software so you can go deeper than just the OBD2 emission codes. So I would scan it if you can, or get it scanned, but it can't be the generic tool that the auto parts stores have, and or the throttle unit, the throttle plate, might need to be cleaned and desludged, and that could totally solve the problem.
And where is the throttle plate located?
Well,
is that something I could do? Or
possibly.
Take it to a...
If you locate the air cleaner, there's going to be a tube that connects the air cleaner to the engine. And on the engine side of that tube is your throttle unit. There's a throttle plate in there. And that's usually accessible by just taking a big clamp off and getting that big tube out of the way. And then you'll see this throttle blade. It's a round, probably a brass-looking plate that moves. And you can go in there with some air intake cleaner and a rag and open it up manually and clean that whole area up. So you potentially could do this yourself, depending on how brave or handy you are.
Okay.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Are there any cars out there left that have direct throttle control the old-fashioned way?
I haven't seen any, Ray, but maybe there's some really entry-level vehicles. Maybe the bottom-end Kias or Hyundais. But
isn't there less to go wrong? Shouldn't they be on the top end?
You mean put a cable instead of the electronics?
Yeah.
Well, the electronics now neatens up things. There's no cable. There's no linkage. It saves money per car because there's less products or parts going in it. And the computer tailors your throttle requests in favor of emissions because people with a heavy right foot are bad for emissions because you're accelerating too hard, snapping the throttle shut, blipping the throttle and all that stuff.
All
the fun stuff.
Exactly.
All the stuff.
I'm glad you said that.
All the muscle car stuff.
All right. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Robert in Providence, Rhode Island. Robert, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a 2005 E320 4MATIC Mercedes, and it's in mint condition with only 51,000 miles on it, and it's due for a major 52,000 mile servicing. My question is, I have an outstanding local mechanic that's been taking care of the car, and he says he could do any required Mercedes service, but I was wondering if it makes more sense to go to an authorized Mercedes dealership for this particular servicing.
I don't think that one is too high tech or advanced for your independent mechanic to handle. Sometimes there's stuff that requires possible programming if there's some updates, some software updates that might be necessary, and that's where you really have to get it to the dealer.
Right.
What you could do, and sometimes you don't get straight or good answers from the dealer, but you could say, hey, I'm getting close to this maintenance. Tell me what's involved and tell me if there's any updates or programming. Just kind of feel them out and see if it sounds like it's an advanced maintenance.
Yeah, I got you. I still have, obviously, the service book that describes what needs to be done, and I don't recall anything referencing any programming or anything like that. It, to me, it did look fairly straightforward.
But software updates won't be in the book.
No, exactly. And they will be things that just pop up as needed as they discover. So I'd interrogate a dealer, and if it sounds like there's nothing crazy there, certainly have the independent guy take care of it for you.
Just be gentle when you interrogate the dealer, Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I understand. I'll be real subtle about that. And that's a great idea. Because I've been struggling with this. I love the car. I want to take care of it, keep it, you know, for a long time. And I just was kind of curious if maybe I should bring it into a dealership.
That's great. Hey, man, thanks a lot for the call and good luck. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. So that's Texas and Rhode Island today.
Let's try one from California.
You think California?
I don't know. Maybe.
All right. You never know. How about like Guam or something?
You never know.
All right. Let's go over to a little closer to home. Marcus in Albany. Marcus, you're on.
Yeah. How you doing? I got a 2011 Toyota Tundra with a 5.7 liter. It's got about 30,000 miles on it. I had an issue initially where it would shake the front end to where it almost felt like you almost had a flat tire. So my wife and I had to get out and, you know, take a look, make sure we didn't have one. And we brought it to the dealer, and they couldn't find anything wrong with it. I mean, the problem has gotten less and less, but it does it pretty sporadically. You'd be driving down the road, all of a sudden it'll just start shaking. And we brought it back again to the dealer. They had it for a day or two, but they couldn't duplicate the problem. So they did a compression balancing on the tires, which I don't know if it helped or not, but you still get every once in a while that shaking. So I was wondering what your thoughts on that would be.
Yeah. An out-of-balance tire is going to give you a shimmy almost all the time at a certain speed. It's not going to come and go that randomly. We've had some cases where people have put a whole bunch of stop leak in a tire. So you got a big puddle of thick water in there, and that'll cause you to get a shake. But if you've never put any fix-a-flat or stop leak in your tires, that's not going to be the issue. But it can be if you ever did that. The other thing we see happening is sticking brake pads. The brake pads get rusty in their mounts and they don't release, so you get a brake pad that sticks after a fairly hard brake application. Now it overheats the brake rotor because the brake is on all the time, even though your foot's off the pedal, makes the rotor warp, shakes the vehicle like crazy. You pull over, everything cools off, and it may stop and not do it again for a while. And the key to that is if you...
Yep, I'm sorry. Yeah, we had the brakes done. We actually had the rotors cut, and like I said, they couldn't duplicate it. So they said they would need to have it duplicated so they would know, you know, where to attack the issue.
If I'm suspicious of sticking brakes, I'll bring the vehicle in. I'll get the wheels off the ground and put somebody in the vehicle and step on the brakes real hard, and then with my hand on the tire, say, go ahead and release it, and we'll see if we have any wheels that are not freeing up quickly or at all. And that's how sometimes you can spot a stuck brake pad. So I would think that's a good place to look, even though you may have just had some work done. It's always good to double check that and make sure there's not one jammed up in there. Or a bad caliper, for that matter.
So they could stick with heat or rust or things of such.
Yeah, and it'll shake the vehicle pretty profoundly if you have a stuck caliper or a stuck brake pad.
All right, Marcus, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our expert guest, and John and Kanan. John, you're on.
Thanks. Gordon, I'm back with my 57 Willys.
Oh, yeah. How is it overheating?
It does have a direct throttle connection, by the way.
There you go.
but it's got another issue that I want to ask you about. I was using my tractor to push it into the garage the other day, back it into the garage, and tractor has forks on the front of it. I pushed it in, seemed fine. About half an hour, I came back, and I noticed that there was an oil leak, apparently coming from the transfer case in the front. I put a bucket under where the leak was, left it for a while. It collected about a quart or maybe more of very dark oil. I have no idea what I did or what needs to be done to fix it, but my garage is about 3 miles away from where I am. What I'm wondering is if I open up that transfer case, there's a plug that looks like its function is to fill it, and I put some 90 gear oil in there. Is there any reason I can't drive it in two-wheel drive, those 3 miles or so, driving slowly down the road?
If you don't lose all that fluid in that very short period of time, you'll be fine. Are you sure it is leaking from the transfer case? That's what you did determine?
I can't really get under there, but
yeah.
That's definitely where the dripping is coming from, and I can't imagine that it could be anywhere else because the tines were, right underneath, the forks are right underneath the
vehicle. You think you may have poked it?
Well, I thought I might have, but I looked at the case, and I can't see anywhere where it looks poked.
Well,
but
of course, the transmission's right in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
So just be sure it's not gear oil out of the transmission because they're two different units.
Well, okay, this is the unit that the axles from the two front wheels goes right into this unit.
And it's behind the transmission. You're talking you in the front end?
Front end.
Okay, so the front differential?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Yeah, the transfer case is behind the transmission, but the...
I'm sorry, misspoke.
But you're talking about the front differential. Okay, yeah. Those definitely have areas where they can leak, especially on something that old. So, yes, two-wheel drive, so it won't drive that front unit. Fill it and just watch it before you take off for five minutes just to see if it doesn't pour out almost as fast as you poured it in.
Yep.
And there could be a front cover that you poked a hole through in that diff. Well, it might be easy to fix.
You make a point, and we have to take a quick break here. We're a minute overdue. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The home stretch straight ahead.
Support for WMT comes from Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Apples, peaches, pumpkins, winter squash, apple cider, pies, pastries, kapusta, galumpki, and pierogies, lakevieworchard.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. And Merriman and Pfister's Marketplace, Del Mar, an independent artisan gift shop showcasing the works of artists in the community and beyond, merrimanandpfister.com. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio, privatefinancialdesign.com, securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. And Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and respite care, friends, family, community, 518-456-7831 for tours or information.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And Gordon, before we get back to the phones, a few emails have come in. This one's from Sheila. And Sheila says, I think I might need to have my transmission replaced. My car is currently off the road. Do you think I should go straight to a transmission repair shop, or should I start off with a regular side street mechanic?
Boy.
No pressure with that answer.
No,
oh boy.
Well, asking a transmission shop for a transmission is an absolute, yeah, sure, we can help you, you know, $4,000 later. I would get it diagnosed to be 100% sure she needs a transmission.
Okay, that's a good start.
Because I have had a lot of people maybe brainstorm or freak themselves out that they need something really expensive and really bad. And it turns out to be something relatively minor that's mimicking a big failure.
Okay.
I would get it diagnosed.
All right, but I mean, just to be
clear, at a regular shop.
Our legal department wants to make it clear that transmission shops are good too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But sometimes, like Click and Clack would say, if you go to a certain place that sells a certain item, your wish may get fulfilled.
All right, this one is from Jessica. I have a 2010 Dodge Grand Caravan, and when I start it first thing in the morning or first time that day, there is a grinding sound. Does the starter need to be changed, or does it sound like something else? Oil has been changed and checked recently. Jessica in Belchertown, Mass.
Yeah, that grinding sound can be horrible, and this is what I do. If I've got a grinding starter issue, is usually you can get a view of the ring gear or the drive plate that the starter bites into. It's a giant gear.
Yeah.
Get a helper to turn that engine over a one complete revolution and study that ring gear. If that's all good, you probably just need a starter.
Okay, fair enough. And this last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Bob in Poughkeepsie. A 2008 Jeep Patriot has one of those Jeep CVT transmissions. While driving on highway, the car began revving very high, would not go over 60 at that time. After turning it off, now works fine around town. I'm told the transmission can't be fixed, only replaced at a Jeep dealer. Any suggestions?
Yeah. Those CVTs are not hitting the transmission shops very hard as far as being able to rebuild them yet. However, there's a lot of programming and software updates that have occurred, and I'm not just talking about that particular model, but mileage, fluid change interval, and make sure the updates are all up to date before you throw in the towel on that tranny.
Okie doke. Back to the phones we go, and Roger in Warwick. Roger, you're on.
Hey, Ray, I didn't know you were a car guy as well as an audio guy.
Oh, heck yeah. I know. I know a little bit about nothing.
Hey, Gordon, I've got a 2009 Acura RDX, and apparently the transmission oil cooler shares the same core with the engine oil cooler, and I had the transmission oil cooler fail, and I had transmission fluid in my engine coolant and a little bit of coolant in the transmission fluid. So I changed the radiator, flushed both of the systems, I power flushed the transmission fluid, but my concern is, am I going to have transmission problems down the road because of that coolant getting in the transmission oil?
So did coolant actually make it into the transmission?
The transmission oil wasn't bright red and, you know, clear. It was a little milky, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's
clearly not as much as transmission oil went into the coolant.
Yeah. That's a bad scenario because Nissan suffered some real big problems with their transmission coolers, which are located inside of the radiator.
And, why did they do that?
Well, because they're using the engine coolant to also cool the transmission oil. So it's
very stupid design.
Yeah, sounds like it.
They all do it, almost all of them. Some have the coolers on the outside and they're using air. I think what I would do, and you don't have a dipstick on that transmission, do you?
I think so.
Yeah, because a lot of these automatics today don't have dipsticks. You can't check them yourself. It has to be carried out at a place with a lift, or you have to get under it. But this is what I would do. Get a sample of that transmission fluid. And, you know, just take a bit out of the pan. There should be a drain on there. And really study that. And if it is milky and it does look like there's been liquid in there, it definitely wants to get cleaner, because it will affect the transmission at some point.
Now, I did power flush the transmission fluid.
That's
good. After the repair was done, we power flushed the transmission fluid. So I got it all. I mean, we must have gone through 20 quarts of fluid in that power wash process.
Yep, that's good.
But, you know, I'm concerned that the clutch packs may have gotten soaked and that kind of thing.
You know,
it seems to be shifting okay.
Yeah, it may not have harmed them. Depends how long the coolant was in there. But I would get a sample of it now and just see how it looks. If it looks beautiful, nice and you know, pinkish-reddish and not milky and dirty, don't worry about it. If it's looking horrible, flush it again.
Did we lose you, Roger?
Very good.
Hey, Roger, one question before you go. Do you have any? Yes. Do you have a tube stereo amp in your Acura?
No, we were talking about that. We should put a tube amplifier in the car.
Yeah, man.
The problem is we're afraid it might get a little too warm.
Yeah, well, you know what? You could use that instead of the heater.
There you go.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call.
Guys.
That's Roger from Roger's High Fidelity down Warwick.
Maybe he could put a Macintosh system in his car.
Oh, he makes his own tube stuff.
Have you ever listened to a current tube type audio system like by Macintosh or one of those big players?
I really can't afford it.
No, but if you go to Best Buy.
Oh, yeah, no, I've been to the shops and heard them.
Oh, the sound is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably expensive.
So apparently the car repair work is really doing well for you if you have that stuff.
I don't have it personally.
Don't?
I've listened to it.
It is beautiful. Tube audio, you can't go wrong. Mary in Pittsfield. Mary, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2010 Dodge Grand Caravan. And the mystery is that it gets much below 35 degrees, and the car stalls within a quarter mile of taking off out of my driveway. And I've tried taking out the north, south, east, and west. I've had it to the garage. They can't see any codes. They can't make it. They can't reproduce it. I kind of lose power. I first feel it in the steering wheel. I lose power, and then I'm dead in the road. I am able to start it again, but it's certainly giving me an unsafe feeling about the car. You had this experience with Grand Caravans. Do you have any thoughts? Oh, and the one other thing I can only think to tell you is that even in fair weather, during the summer too, the car seems rough for the first couple miles.
Okay.
I've had all the wires changed.
Oh, good for you.
How many miles are on the vehicle now?
92.
Okay.
And this started at about maybe 90,000.
All right.
We're seeing a tremendous amount of deposit buildup on the fuel injectors, the intake valves and the pistons, and sometimes getting back into the intake manifold. And it's become a chronic problem with newer vehicles with direct fuel injection that doesn't spray the fuel in front of the intake valve. And it's creating a lot of misfires, a lot of stalling. Once the engine fully warms up, it usually is okay.
Yep.
So a vehicle of your vintage, you can do a couple of things. You can get a fuel injection cleaning job at a garage where they hook up a pressurized can of cleaner, and they spray it through the fuel system. And it blasts the intake valves clean, cleans the injectors and the pistons, or you can attempt to do it yourself with treatments that go in.
This is easy, Mary. This is easy.
You just pour it in the gas tank. You just pour it. It's a big concentrated 20-ounce bottle and the trade name, the chemical name is called Tecron. And it's
T-E-C-H-R-O-N. Okay.
And if you, it comes in 12 and 20 ounce. Get two 20 ounce bottles.
And the trick with that is you wait until your gas tank is almost empty, right? And then put it in and then fill it up?
Here's a little trick to do with this stuff. When the tank is at a quarter, put a 20 ounce in it. Drive the car for 15 to 20 miles and then immediately go fill it because it's a very, very strong concentration. Then drive that full tank close to empty.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're giving it a really high test blast of the stuff.
Yes, and that's my own little twist to putting the stuff in the tank because there's another product that does a similar job and also cleans catalytic converters. And they're saying quarter tank, full dose, 10 to 15 miles, then fill the tank.
Interesting.
So I do the same thing with the Tecron.
But it's not a very scary thing to do, Mary. You can do it.
It's actually fun.
All right. Now, so what do I do with the 22nd ounces?
Do it again. When that gas tank is dead empty, well, not dead, but when that first tank is close to empty, I would give it a second treatment, but no more until you get another oil change because the stuff's a little bit hard on, the deposits can get into the oil.
Okay. Well, Mary, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go over to Jill in Waterford. Hello, Jill.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. I'm talking back to a gentleman who had an 08 Civic with a dead air conditioner. I had the exact same problem with my 08 Civic. And I'm not trying to scare the guy, but I took it to my mechanic, whom I have always trusted implicitly, and he told me I needed a whole new compressor.
It's entirely possible, yes. Yeah, we've seen lots of that.
But there are going to be different symptoms.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Symptom, different problem.
Sure.
I tried to charge it. It wouldn't charge. It died literally, I mean, as I was driving. I turned it on. I'm driving home. And then suddenly I noticed it wasn't cool anymore, but I hadn't turned it off.
Yeah.
And that was the end of it.
Compressors can fail like that with zero notice.
And like I said, I'm not trying to scare the guy, but let's put it this way. I got talked into getting rid of my 08 Civic.
Oh, boy.
Because they said it wasn't worth putting $700 to $900 into it.
Well, that can be true. I've had several cars where they said, look, it's not worth putting another dollar in this thing. So,
boy, when they tell you that, you believe them.
I was going to keep it for another year or two because I've never had a problem with it until this.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, Jill.
But, case it up.
Yeah, it is what it is. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. I'm getting signs from our call screener, Joe Makowicz. Joe, what am I supposed to do here? Three. Take three. All right. I'll take three. It's Elizabeth in Jamaica, Vermont. Elizabeth.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Now, there's a couple people who have called in about AC compressors and 2008 Hondas.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the issues I had is that Honda installed a defective AC clutch and coil. So they do have a service bulletin out on it. And if those people are under 100,000 miles, they can go and get it replaced. The manufacturer will pay for it.
Oh, boy. And Jill just got rid of her car over this.
And Jill is listening.
I would get on the phone.
Slamming her fist on the desk. Well, thanks, Elizabeth. We appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Have a good one. Quickly over to Tampa Ray. Tampa Ray, are you really in Tampa right now?
No, that's a stage name. My member name with WFCR.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, you're at WAMC.
Which I will update very shortly now that you have reminded me.
Splendid. It's not our station, but...
quick.
All right.
It's simply that I don't want to get into a discussion.
All right, you only have a minute, so there's a fair bet you won't get into a discussion.
The woman who called about the door lock.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I believe that Mr. Ficky is overlooking something.
All right.
And that that incident in the parking lot, believe it or not,
right,
could be the cause, and then consider that immediately after the symptoms arose, and that is all. Take another call.
Okay, man. Thanks a lot for that. Okay. Well, we've put the calipers in position and put the brakes on this program. And
the only comment I had very quickly is her car, I asked her, does not have radio frequency remotes. I mean, it is entirely possible that there still is a, if that car came with that option, that it did go haywire.
Could be one of those Tesla deals where there was a mad scientist shooting a power ray at the...
And then a DeLorean raced by at 88 miles per hour.
Well, you know, Gordon, I'd say we just call it. We cut our losses. And thank you very much for being here, Gordon Fricke. Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1993, ColbyService.com. And Lori Donovan Designs, Lennox, for over 40 years, offering contemporary and estate jewelry and colored gemstones, specializing in custom handmade jewelry, repurposing and repairs, LoriDonovan.com. Gordon Fricke, thanks again for being here. Thanks to all of our listeners for the great, mostly great calls. And thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Joe Makowicz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday, and we bring in a couple of Hall of Famers tomorrow. We got Rocco DeFazio, we got Deanna Fox, and we'll talk about Italian cuisine throughout the WAMC region. Stand by now for news.